You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
I'm very privileged to have el profesor Marcelo Saavedra. Él es profesor de la Universidad de Ottawa in Indigenous Studies. He's also coordinator of Bolivia Action Solidarity Network. Welcome to our show, Marcelo.
Yes, hello, Silvia. Thank you for having me in your program.
Thank you so much for being with us. Now, the struggle of people throughout Latin America to elect governments that are reflective of their needs as a population, that are willing to create transformative change, has been an ongoing struggle throughout the hemisphere. One victory story has been that of Bolivia. On December 6th general election, the governing movement towards socialism, the MAS, in Bolivia, headed by President Evo Morales, won a resounding victory. Tell us about the significance of this victory.
Yes, Silvia. Well, first of all, as we always do in Aboriginal circles, we have to acknowledge the sacred four directions. We also have to acknowledge the four sacred elements because we are made of these elements. We have to thank Pachamama, our Mother Earth. We have to acknowledge our ancestors and our future generations. We have to do this because we are them, and we have to recognize them living in our form. And I want to explain why we have the first indigenous president in Bolivia. In Bolivia, there is 84% of the population is indigenous peoples. And for the past five centuries, we never had this sort of representation in any of the powers that were held in the state. So on December the 6th, it's a historical date because Bolivians, by a vast majority, they re-elected President Evo Morales, an Aymara Indian, by 64%. I don't know that anybody has come close to this percentage in the democracies we have in the Western Hemispheres. So this is clearly like indigenous people's voices being heard and also being put in motion, and it also shows the vast popularity of President Evo Morales, because in his first administration he managed to become a very intelligent and very prudent leader of the Bolivian state. He managed to administer the state in a way that has never been done before, and this is very like a very sharp contrast with the previous presidents in Bolivia. So this is clearly a light of hope, and most importantly, it's a realm of possibilities that are being opened up, not only for Bolivians, but also for humanity as a whole. Because, like, we are changing the state. We are changing the colonial state we have been living in. We are trying to transform it into a state that is going to reflect our ancestral, our sacred notions about how to live in harmony with Mother Earth, in harmony with each other. And for this, we have a set of guiding principles, that of complementarity, because in the Andean world, we don't understand any instance in the universe if we don't think about the existence of two opposite but complementary forces. We also have the solidarity as a guiding principle, but I want to also give you a sense that this process is not reduced to the presence of Evo Morales. Evo Morales, a couple of days ago, has been designated as the spiritual leader of the indigenous peoples of the Americas, of the Abya-Yala, as we call it. Abya-Yala is in the Kuna language from Panama, meaning the land in fruit, and so he's now the spiritual leader of our peoples. But our process goes beyond Evo Morales. He's just a historical turning point, but the hardest tasks are ahead of us and are going to be taken by our present generations and our future generations up to the seventh skin.
I want to talk a little bit about that, because what was most significant to me was that the MAS candidates won a two-thirds majority in both the Senate and the Plurinational Legislative Assembly. Can you talk about the makeup of this Plurinational Legislative Assembly?
This is the continuation of the precedent Evo Morales administration, in which we witnessed for the first time indigenous languages being spoken in the legislative power. You know, in the past, it was only Spanish as a colonial language that was spoken in the Senate and in the deputy chamber as well. But in the year 2006, when Evo Morales became the first indigenous president, he also, managed to bring to the legislative power an important number of indigenous leaders that spoke in their language. And of course, they spoke in their languages. They spoke in Aymara, they spoke in Quechua, they spoke in Guarani. And this was like a shock for the legislators, because they couldn't understand why these Indians are talking their languages. Our language here, our mainstream language, is Spanish. So there was a bit of a quarrel in between. But nowadays, I can tell you with a lot of joy in my heart that 50% of the legislative assembly is made up of indigenous peoples. And of course, they are going to be speaking their languages, because now we recognize all indigenous languages to be official languages of Bolivia. But this goes beyond the ethnic makeup of the country. Because, like in our system of beliefs, in our worldview, we are not a patriarchal society. We are a matricentric society, which means that we bestow a very important role on women. Actually, we have a set of prophecies that talk about the reequilibrating force that the feminine force field is going to bring about. And as I mentioned before, we don't understand the universe. We don't understand anything if we don't see the per component of everything. And in Aboriginal countries, in indigenous cultures, in my country, there is always the per. There is always man-woman as a single word. We call it chachawarmi, meaning man-woman, but you don't separate them. It's like a unit. And following this notion, 40% of the higher rank officials in my country are women. So this is not only a big step forward in terms of indigenous peoples taking over the state they were meant to administer, because we are 84% of the population, but also women, because if you see basic demographics on a planetary basis, women are 52% of the population. And, in one course I had last year, we found out that in legislative powers, only 12% of women were legislators. So that's clearly a very pervert sort of democracy, because women are not represented. If you would have a true democracy, 50% of women would also be in positions of power and also taking decisions.
One of the things that the MAS has achieved has been that 25 of the 36 senator seats have gone to the MAS, and also 90 of the deputies of 130 are also Evo Morales MAS candidates. So there are a lot of changes happening. So tell us, what has captured the popularity of Evo Morales among the masses in Bolivia? What are the changes he's introducing that are captivating so much popular support?
When you think of Bolivia, I mean, you have to be aware that 84% of the population is indigenous peoples, and they speak indigenous languages. And the very fact that Evo Morales is Quechua Aymara, and his first language is Aymara, and he comes from a very poor family, very humble family, and he doesn't even have a profession. He just managed to finish his secondary degree. So that's a real representation of the country, because the country is like that. You know, Bolivians are like that. The majority of Bolivians, they are not well-educated. They speak broken Spanish, because they also speak Aymara. They also speak Quechua. and Evo Morales represents that. So the vast majority of Bolivians, when they see Evo Morales, they see themselves. It's like looking themselves in a mirror. That's why, you know, he's captured all that huge amount of votes among indigenous peoples. But also he's been quite wise in capturing the vote of middle classes, because in the past, the middle class has always been just like an instrument of the local oligarchy. But this time, Evo Morales, with a set of policies, public policies, like some bonuses that he's given to children, to old people, you know, things that have never happened in the past, he's shown Bolivians of all walks of life that, for one thing, he was going to be an honest administrator. Actually, the first measure he took when he first became president is he cut his salary by half or something like that, and he also cut the salary of all ministers by half. And everybody knows now, even people from the opposition, that Evo Morales, he is a completely transparent human being. You know, they try to catch him, like, you know, they offer him money, they offer him all kinds of prerogatives, but he never took them. So he's completely transparent, he has nothing to hide, and people know that. So the middle classes also voted for him, because during his first administration, although the country was immersed in what the Vice President Alvaro Garcia Linera called the catastrophic tie, meaning that there were two important powers confronting each other for about, you know, from 2006 to 2008. The country was on the brink of civil war for, many, you know, for, I would say for 80% of the time while Evo Morales was in his first administration. But anyway, the public policies that the administration took, you know, put Bolivia in a very good economic situation. And actually, you know, we have the most economic growth rate in the whole hemisphere. It's about above 6%. So this has had a trickle-down effect on the middle classes, and they have seen that by tapping into the inner markets, public policies also could affect them in a good way, because the oligarchy and the mass media, which is owned by the oligarchy, were telling them, were trying to scare them and telling them, look, if you are going to vote for him, if you keep on supporting Evo Morales, we are going to have like a communist state. You are going to have your children taken away. They are going to kill off your elders and stuff like that. And of course, after 3 years of Evo Morales being the president of Bolivia, they didn't see that. Actually, they saw the complete opposite. And that's how he managed to also become allies with the middle class.
I want to cut in for a second, because you mentioned one thing that I think is very important, and that is, in society, particularly Western culture, we are told that decisions should be made by experts, that we should leave the decision-making process to those who are who have some particular degree, or anything outside of that is anecdotal, and so we, you know, of little value. But what you're presenting is this idea that knowledge is not only culturally and socially constructed, but that, you know, individuals, people, you know, from all backgrounds have something amazing to contribute. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about his vision. The first thing he did was introduce 15 bills that are major components of the programs in the Legislative Assembly for the coming year. Can you talk about this?
I think you say, you know, you've mentioned something very important. Evo Morales is someone who cares. And, of course, he didn't have the chance to study, so he just managed to hardly finish his secondary degree, as I mentioned before. And, of course, in the past, we had a Harvard graduate as president, and the only thing they managed to do is to administer their own pockets, because one of the things that the colonial state was good for is for the permanent plundering of our natural resources and for this, you know, to set up a system of discrimination, exclusion, and invisibilization of indigenous peoples. But Evo Morales, just by the fact that he was, you know, he had these linkages with his origins, with his ancestors, with his people, with Mother Earth, with Pachamama, all of our sacred relationships, he could become a very good president, and he's shown that. He doesn't have any degree, and he's very proud of that, because as he mentions very often, he says, my university has been life. I have graduated from life, and his life has been a harsh one. When people are confronted with very key questions, they become quite lucid, and they come out with very important learnings. For instance, in the year 2003, what we call the October Agenda, because this war for hydrocarbons was waged in October 2003, people on the streets with nothing else to lose, because they have lost everything, they just have their bodies, their lives to lose, they put it in front of the tanks and of the armies. And, you know, there were hundreds of people that were killed, hundreds of families that were destroyed. But in those times of crisis, people started to question the system they were living in. And, I see the same thing in Haiti nowadays. Because, like, after the earthquake, you know, I could clearly relay myself to the situation in Haiti, not because there was an earthquake in Bolivia, but there was a time of crisis. And in time of crisis, like, for instance, in Haiti now, they are questioning the notion of private property. And, of course, the U.S. Marines are being sent on Haiti, like, in the thousands, to actually control that private property, foreign direct investment, is not compromised. But let me get back to my country. In times of crisis, these people, they became very lucid, and actually they devised the October Agenda, which became the political platform of the political party of Evo Morales. And Evo Morales, because he's so linked to his people, he took it and he developed specific public policies in order to implement the October Agenda, which basically includes the nationalization of our natural resources. It includes also bringing to justice the president that was responsible for the massacre in October, and also to redesign the colonial state, which he did with the Constituent Assembly. So he delivered all the promises he had made. But this is a long-term process. Not because we have an indigenous president, it means that things are changed automatically. This is a process that is going to take, surely, generations. And we know that. And we are preparing for that, because we see that the first step is to deploy our organizational and our institutional indigenous organizations, because they are the ones that are going to lead this process of change. And this is not only for Bolivia. This is for humanity. You know, we are trying to dismantle the colonial state, but more importantly, we are trying to dismantle the colonial mentality. And we are going to achieve this. We know that this is a big challenge. You know, we are risking a lot. We are risking Evo Morales. We are risking, you know, the survival of our own process, because we know that there's imperial interest behind the invasion of Haiti, for one thing. We see that there is imperial interest in setting up 7 military bases in Colombia. We know that there is a military base in Paraguay. So the empire is not at ease. They are very worried that people are taking, you know, are deciding for themselves, that they are trying to devise a new state, a new society. They are trying to dismantle the colonial mentality. They are very worried about this. But also we are prepared for this, because we are thinking about our future generations up to the seventh skin. That is almost 175 years. Because we have to be responsible enough that we can see our children right into their eyes without feeling any shame, because we have delivered and we have been to the task that history has assigned to us.
With the case of Evo Morales, as I pointed out earlier, the first thing he did as soon as he was sworn in was introduce 15 new bills. What are they? They included a vast overhaul of the state apparatus through provisions on indigenous and regional autonomy, a new constitutional tribunal, establishment of universal medical insurance, an agrarian reform law that, providing for expropriation of unused lands deemed appropriate for agricultural use, an anti-corruption law that will authorize investigations of major private fortunes currently evading taxation. I mean, these are all things that any society wants. This is about justice and creating equitable systems in society. So how do we organize our communities so that we see beyond our superficial differences, what color is my hair, what color is my skin, and realize that we're all victims of colonization at some point, and that we need to change those structures.
Yeah, that's right, Silvia. And all the measures that Evo Morales, all those 15 laws that were passed by Evo Morales, they are very important. And they are big challenges as well, because they are just laws. We have to still implement them. We have to make them alive, and we have to institutionalize them so they become alive beings forming our society. On of all the measures you've mentioned, one of the most important ones that he's trying to implement is the one that corresponds to getting rid of corruption. Because as he's also mentioned before in the past, the colonial state is based basically on one principle. It's the right to corruption. Because the colonial state has always been there just to create poor people, vast amounts of poor people, and tiny minorities of very rich peoples. And that's like a prerogative they have taken. And that we've been like the subjects and the victims of that state. And that we are not going to commit the same mistakes. Like, for one thing, the colonial state has excluded the majorities of Bolivians. We've lived through that. We are not going to do that. And as you mentioned before, and not only pertains to Bolivian indigenous peoples, but also pertains to other indigenous peoples. Like, I'm giving an introductory class nowadays to Aboriginal studies here on the back of Turtle Island, on Canada and North America in general. And what I've seen is all the similarities between indigenous peoples. It's just amazing. It is as if we come from the same matrix which we do, because we come from Mother Earth. All indigenous peoples on the planet, they think of themselves as being part of indigenous of Mother Earth. They cannot own their mother. They cannot own their territories, because they are just part of them.
I was just going to point out that, when you talk about our similarities and the things, the struggles that we face seem to be the same. They seem to be a struggle for dignity, a struggle for self-determination, a struggle for, self-identification, being able to say proudly, I'm indigenous, I'm black, I'm woman. All of those things that somehow over time have served to divide us and create hierarchies of power. How do we overcome those superficial differences, and how do we move beyond the sectoral divisions that have for too long kept us apart?
Well, listen, when the Europeans came to our lands, they came with a set of values that reflected the way they were developing in Europe. And some of those values were absolutely alien to indigenous peoples in the Abya Yala. One of them, I'm using as a very, a benchmark for Western societies, is the notion of rights. Because the notion of rights implies the construction, the design of states. They go together. Because when you have a right, you are demanding your right to the state, so they go together. And these states, they are the colonial states. There is not an indigenous language on the planet that has a word for right. So this is clearly something that was brought by the Europeans. We did find other notions in other indigenous cultures. Like, for instance, we found dignities, we found integrities, and most of all, we found responsibilities. And this is very important because, like all the states nowadays, they are based on the notion of right. They are based on the notions, and the notion of private property is based on the notion of rights. So we have to dismantle this notion. We have to dismantle the notion that you can own the commons, as we call it, like water, land, animals, and other things that belong to everybody, but they don't belong to anybody at the same time. We have to dismantle that because the colonial state is based on that. And when I say that we have to dismantle also the colonial mentality, I mean that these notions have been so much embedded over five centuries that we actually take for granted that we have rights. But this is an inversion of the natural law, because in natural law, you don't have those things. You cannot prove, if you follow natural law, you cannot prove that you have private property. And we know this very well in indigenous communities. So that's what we're trying to do. Actually, we have the knowledges and the wisdom of our ancestors, of our cultures. You know, like as human beings, we've been around for about 200,000 years, you know, and the colonial period has been for about 500 years. So if you just compare 500 years to 200,000 years, it's nothing. And the process of globalization has been here only for about 20 to 30 years, not more than that, since they signed the Consensus of Washington back in the 90s, this last century. So what we have to do is we have to radicalize, we have to become more radical in our vision, in how we carry about the democracy as perceived by indigenous nations. And we don't believe in liberal democracy. We don't believe in the democratic system as a system of competition. We believe in the notion of a democracy of consensus. That's why we usually, in indigenous communities, like if you see anywhere, they don't have political parties. We don't need them. And eventually, I think political parties also in my country, they will have to wither away, and they will have to give way to the community as an articulating unit for preserving the survival of our own species. Because what is at stake is not our planet. What is at stake, it's the survival of our own species. Because if we keep on, going towards where we are heading to, we are going to find an abyss. So it is the task, it is the responsibility of indigenous peoples, and especially indigenous peoples in Bolivia, that we give direction. We change directions, not only for our country and our peoples, but also for the whole humanity.
That was beautiful. Thank you. I want to remind our listeners that you are the coordinator of the Bolivia Action Solidarity Network. For people who are interested in becoming involved and joining the solidarity movement, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, we are a coalition, a national coalition here in Canada, and we also have linkages with other solidarity committees in Europe and in South America as well. We are trying to organize ourselves on a planetary basis because, as I mentioned before, we all live on the same spaceship, which is Mother Earth. So if if your listeners want to get in touch with us, they can go to our website, which is www.grupoapoyo.org, GRUPOAPOYO.org.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today. My guest is the Professor Marcelo Saavedra. He's the professor at the University of Ottawa, and he teaches Indigenous Studies, and he's also the coordinator of the Bolivia Action Solidarity Network. Thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you, Silvia.
Take care.
Cambia también lo
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.